College of Judaism.
And welcome.
The Hebrew alphabet, and now we're going to go into the individual letters of the Hebrew alphabet. And the Zohar, in the Maimar Ha'otiyot de Rabbi Hinuna Saba, the essay of the letters of Rabbi Hinuna the Elder, it says there that when God wanted to create the universe, the letters appeared before God one by one in reverse order, and each one pleaded with God to create the world with its letter. There's a book, I wrote a book, The Energy Structure of the Alphabet, which I don't have here. But there is another book, The Power of the Alphabet. You read the story in greater detail. In that book, the whole event is described as a science fiction movie. But here, we should really ask ourselves, what's the story really about? Does this story have to do with ego? That is to say that every letter appears before God out of his ego and wishes the word to be created with it. I am the best, I am the greatest, I am the most beautiful letter. You should love me more than all the others. Is that what it's all about? Or are we dealing here with ego? And now another question that we could ask is, why did these letters appear before the Holy One, blessed be He, in a reverse order? Because usually when you deal with the Hebrew alphabet, you deal with A, B, C, Aleph, Bet, Gimel. So why in this particular case do we hear that these letters appeared in reverse order? So in order to understand this, we should understand that the Zohar is telling us what happened was that there was an argument between every letter and God. Every letter appears before God and presents his case, and because of his attributes, he asks God to create the world with my attribute. And again, you've got to understand, it's not that a letter is marching up there, it's an intelligence. You're talking about an energy. And God replies, no, I don't think so. And he gives the following reasons. And then there's a debate, and finally the letter is dismissed, and another letter appears. So what is this all about? We have here a personification of letters with human characteristics. And we also know that letters are not human. There are letters, and then there are humans. But these are two different things. And Rabbi Ashlag, who was the founder of the Kabbalah Center in Jerusalem, at the turn about 1930 or 40, about a little earlier, maybe in the 20s, he said, "V'hine hadrush hazeh shel ha'otiyot," this story of the letters in the Zohar, "hu amok mikol amukim," is the deepest of all other situations. And so in order, we have to go to creation. Why was the world created? And this was the beginning of the first Kabbalah class, if you remember. The world was created for only one reason, and that is so that we can make a correction. This means that we can tikkun. That means that we came to this world, and this world that we live in is the world of the Eitz Hadat, the world of the tree of knowledge, good and bad. There's good stuff here, there's bad stuff here. We also learned in Kabbalah 1, when we studied the Ana B'Koach, that the first sentence of the Ana B'Koach connects us to the tree of life. So it means it only connects us to the good. And that's what everybody likes. You know, when you move into a new house, you leave out all the bad stuff and you bring in all the good stuff. The same applies with characteristics. If there's something about me that is bad, I'm not going to rest until I remove it. If, however, I don't know that it's bad, then I'm never going to remove it. And that's the nature of life. It's getting the good and removing the bad. And that's the world we live in. And why? Because we have in this life good things that come from the light, bad things that come from the klipa, from the veil, from that which is the nether world. So what we have to do is rid ourselves of the klipa and keep the light only in our lives. And that's what all of life is about. And the same applies with a builder. You want to build a table, you keep that which fits into the design, and the rest you get rid of. And the same applies with a business. We are constantly choosing that which we need and discarding that which we do not need. And when the world was created at that moment, when it was in its nucleus state, not nuclear, but nucleus, at its seed level, at the earliest stage of thought. And if the thought is there, there comes this process of sorting, this process of selecting, this process of getting the good and ridding ourselves of the bad. It is the removing of bread of shame. It's the removing of the klipah. It's the removing of the veil, that which is negative, and klipah, and correction. Now, every letter is not a human which has an ego. We're dealing here with an intelligence. That's the idea, that every letter has an innate intelligence. Every letter is a power of intelligence. And we learned that last week, by the way. That's the result of the creation of the universe and the interaction process between the light and the vessel. Now, before the Tzimtzum, before the great contraction, the great restriction, right, we were receiving everything. Remember that story from Kabbalah 1? We received everything we wanted. Then came the Tzimtzum and made the desire to receive an illegitimate vessel. We remember that? This means that the moment I have a desire to receive and draw the light into it, what do I receive? What? Yeah, I have the bread of shame, but that's called, yeah, a short circuit, a klipah. If I just receive that which is given to me, I create a short circuit. Well, there's another system created, another vessel created, and this system is the system which is called returning light, or chozer. Receiving the light is direct light. I want, I receive. That's direct light. And that is the Big Bang. It's destructive. So now the real vessel is returning light. This is a kind of energy that we create by sharing. What is the flow of energy when we want for ourselves? It goes from out, in, right? But when we resist and we share, what is the direction of the energy? Out, in, and out. That's called returning light. The light wants to enter. I let a little of it enter and I bounce the light back. It's like a tennis game. If the opponent hits the ball into your court and you receive it, you lose. If you bounce the ball back to the other court and it doesn't come back to you, you win. So if you take the light and bounce it back to the light's court, you win. So this new system is called a desire to receive in order to share. It's referred to in the Zohar as Or Chozer, returning light. And therefore, if I want something, how can I get it? Really, how can I get it and keep it? By sharing. It's the paradox. The only way I can create a vessel for the light to stay with me is to create sharing out of my desire to receive. And when I do that, it's like a tennis game. I just hit the ball out of my court, because the moment the ball comes into my court without me returning it, I lose the game. That's life. And that is called in Kabbalah, binding by striking. So listen to this paradox. You want to bind the light to you, you've got to strike it back. That's a paradox. You want it, so what do you got to keep it? You push it away. That's illogical. But we learn that what is logical is not real. And what is illogical in Kabbalah is real. Therefore, in order for me to draw the light, it's not to draw it from above to below, but from below to above. Now, we talked about mother letters two weeks ago, mother letters that we spoke about, the Aleph, Mem, and Shin. Those were mother letters. The Aleph stands for air. The Mem stands for water. The Shin stands for fire. Aleph, Mem, Shin. Aleph, Mem, Shin. So you've got the Aleph that looks like this. That's air. The Mem is water. And the Shin is fire. Because this is Avir, and this is Mayim, and this is Eish. Aha! But the question I'm asking is, What does that refer to? The electron, the proton, and the neutron. The electron is fire, the proton is water, and the neutron is
air.
These are the basic building blocks of the whole universe. And then we learned that there were seven double letters. What are double letters? There are letters that we didn't talk about it because it was getting too difficult last time. But I'll tell you, you know, you got this letter, which is the B sound, but without the dot, it's a V. So you got a double letter, a B and a V. Okay? And then you got the gibel. Now you must understand, we pronounce this G. But the Yemenites still remember what this sounds is, Z. Z. And then there is the Dalet, which has a dot in it, and there's a Dalet without a dot in it. I don't know how to pronounce the Dalet without. We don't make that distinction anymore. But at one time, there was a distinction in its pronunciation. And then there's also the Kaf and the Chaf. One has a dot in it, one doesn't have a dot in it. And then there's the pay and the fay. One has a dot in it, one is a P sound, one's an F sound. Then another one that I do not know the sound to is the resh, the R sound. And then there is the taf, which we're going to study tonight. There is the taf, and the other one without it is, I don't know what it is. Okay, today they both sound the same. So now let's look at the Tav and analyze its structure. The Tav, according to the Zohar, is the first letter in the alphabet from the end. So the Tav is written, it has a thick line on the top, and from this line emerges two legs. From this line emerges two legs. I'm sorry. Emerges two legs, okay? The one on the left has a fat bottom, and the one on the right is a thin leg. And so the first question we have to ask ourselves is, why is the left leg fat and the right one thin? And again, because the right one, the left one, is a good reason. It goes to McDonald's all the time. No, that's not the reason. And again, we said these letters appear in the reverse order, because the universe, after the contraction, after the Tzimtzum, created a new system of what? Returning light. So if the letter would have appeared from Aleph to Tav in that order, then we would be getting direct light. We don't want to get direct light. We want returning light. So if the letters appear in the reverse order, then this is returning the light. Because, look, it comes down, right? And now you're going to send it back up. So if the letters started Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, you ended up with the Tav, it's going back. You're going to get the Tav first. It's returning light. Got it so far? Then the letters come out in reverse order, and if the world now has to be rebuilt, if the world has to be recreated, then we have to recreate the whole vessel in a returning light structure. All the light that we receive, that we have, we must create a returning light desire, which is a desire to share. So therefore, the letters have to appear in reverse order, because this is the rule that will now reign in the universe. And now we come to the point where we have to decide which letter will be best equipped to do the job, to make sure that finally all the human souls that will come here will make their tikkun properly. Which letter has the ingredient that we can rely upon this letter for the energy of the tikkun? This means separating the bad from the good, but at the same time going forward with the good. Now, you know, there are people who spend their entire life separating the bad from the good, but they're always busying themselves with the bad. They're obsessed with it. In other words, the question really is, how can you separate the bad from the good and remain good? So now the Tav appears to God. And I took this straight out of the Zohar. It says, Ribon ha'olamim, O Lord of the universe, Tov lefanecha livro bi et ha'olam. It would be better for you, O Lord, if you create the world with me. Ki ani chotemet hatabat shelcha ha'emet. because I am the seal of your signet ring, which contains the word Emet. And Emet is spelled Aleph Mem Tav. You don't see this. You don't see what I wrote here.
Yeah.
Oh, you can see it. Okay. All right. I thought this was in the way.
Oh, no.
I don't see it. Oh, I know what it said.
Oh, okay. Good for you. Okay. Okay. And what is that? Truth. And the last letter in the word, Emet, is a Tav. He says, Yafel Lamelech Lahatchil Baot Emet Livro Bi Et Ha'olam. It is better that the king create the world with the letter of truth. So now the Tav had to come first, because we're now dealing with returning light. And this whole story is about how this returning light can be in control. So in the order of returning light, who comes first? Tav. And then the Tav says, I am your signet, which is truth. And we know that the signet ring of God is Emet. And what is the most powerful thing in the universe? It is the last letter of this Emet, which is Tav. Why not Aleph, the first letter of the word Emet? Well, so let's go into the meaning of this word, Emet, truth. When we say the Ashrei prayer, the Psalm 145, there is a sentence which states, Karov Hashem lechol korav lechol asher yikra'uhu be'emet. God is near to all who call upon him, to all who call upon him in truth, with truth. So we could ask, if someone's calling upon God, would he call upon him and why? Does that make sense? Why would one call in the God in the first place? It means he wants to have a conversation with God. Why does it say that God is only close to those who call upon him truthfully and others not? If someone, God forbid, has cancer and he's praying to God, you mean to tell me he's not really praying? He's in trouble. He's praying with all his heart, with all his might, with all his soul. You mean to tell me that there are people who do not pray truthfully and others who do pray truthfully? And another question is, why is the word Emet the seal of the word of God? And you know, there are some Jews, every time they finish a section of the reading of the Torah, the Sfardim, they conclude, they'll say, Be Abraham, Be Kol, and everyone would yell out, Emet. Every time they finish a section of reading the Torah, they yell out, Emet. Good for you. When we say the Shema, the last word we say is Adoshem Elokeichem, Emet. The Lord God is truth. What is this Emet that we're talking about? So we know that the light is completion. We know the light is totality. It's all. The light is the endless. The light has everything inside of it. There is no lack whatsoever with light. There is nothing missing in the light. If you look at the word Emet, the whole structure, you have an Aleph, which is the first letter, and you have the Tav, which is the last letter, and you have the Mem, which is the middle letter of the alphabet. Got it? Aleph, Mem, Tav. Aleph is the first letter of the alphabet. The Mem is the middle letter of the alphabet, and the Tav is the last letter. So we have here everything, the beginning, middle, and end. The truth is everything. The truth is the whole picture with all the details. It's the light force of God. And after the Shema prayer, we continue for a few phrases, and in the Sephardic prayer book at least, you say the word Emet, and Emet, and Emet. We say the word Emet after the Shema in the Sephardic prayer book, 8 times. Why 8 times? Well, what's the numerical value of Emet? The numerical value of Emet is 441. The number is a perfect square root. The perfect square root of 441 is? Huh? You don't know. Okay. The square root of 441, I wouldn't know either.
is 21. Now 21,
what is 21? 21.
7 and 3,
thank you very much. It's one of the words of God. Aleph, Hey, Yud, Hey. Ehe, Yeh. Ehe, Yeh. Ehe, Yeh. When Moses asks God, what is his name? He says, Ehe, Yeh, Asher, Ehe, Yeh. I will be. Potentiality. Got it? So that's why Emet is the signet ring of God. Remember, when Moses asks God, who are you? God answers, Ehyeh Asher Ehyeh. Ehyeh is the name of God which symbolizes Bina. What is Bina? Bina is life, energy, force. When we pray for life on Rosh Hashanah, and every time we pray for life and living, this energy comes from the Sphira of Bina. And so when God says, Ehyeh Asher Ehyeh, which is, I am 21 times 21, you get 441, which is Emet. And Emet is everything. And therefore saying the truth is very important. And that's what this energy intelligence called Tav is saying to the Ribon Ha'olam. But you know, when you ask something, you can answer with the truth, and you can lie. And you can tell a partial truth, and you can tell a partial lie. But the best thing is the best. Why do people lie? Ego. Did you do it? Did you do it? No, no, I didn't do it. Right answer. But in Hebrew we say that ha-sheker ein raglaim. A lie has no feet. It cannot stand. A lie only has one foot. And what do they mean by that? If you want to see, you got the word sheker is written like this. Like this. It only has one foot. Sheker only has one foot. I like that. See that? So if you write the word lie in Hebrew, we get the word sheker, and you see sheker stands on one leg of the kuf. And that's how you show that ultimately it will fall. It is better to say the truth. You know how you can tell a great person? It's the person who can admit that he made a mistake. If you can admit you made a mistake, you can learn from it. But the word Emet will stand, as you will see. And so the Tav being the last letter, because whatever is the truth, the last letter is its manifestation. What is the goal of the tree? What's the goal of the tree? What's the goal of a tree? Fruit. What's the major point of a process? The end result. That's the Tav. Tav, that is the seal. It is done. It is made. It is the manifestation. That's the Tav. And so the Tav very, very logically asks the light, isn't this the best? To be the manifestation? To be the truth? To be the right one? And you know that you have in the fruit the seed as well? And therefore it has everything. If you've got in the fruit, you've got not only the tree, you've got the branches, you've got the leaves, you've got everything, and you've got the seed. You can start all over again. And that's why the Tav felt that he was the correct letter with which to create the universe. He had the right kind of energy. But you see, says God, this letter Tav, you're wonderful, you're beautiful. But this letter Tav also has the word Mavet. And what is Mavet? Death. It's the final letter of the Hebrew word Mavet. M-A-V-E-T. It is the manifestation of that word. The final is great because it is completion. Completion is taking all the light and it is wonderful. But it's also the end. It's death. That also is part of Tav. And so the Tav is the end. And that's not what we want. We want to create something that has no end. We want to create endless. So the Tav has two sides. But that's what we said. It has two pronunciations, right? It has the side of completion and everything. And everything is all done and it's perfect. The Tav is perfection. But on the other hand, the Tav is the end because it is also death. And because the end is not just completion, it is the end, full stop, no more. And the Talmud Shabbat 55a states that in the days to come, the people will have the letter Tav on their forehead. Now you should also know that you have two kinds of letter Tav, right? One letter is for people who are righteous, and for them the letter Tav is completion, it's done. The fruit is ripe and has reached fruition, and one connects back to the endless. But the wicked people will also have the Tav on their foreheads, but for them it will mean death. So you can begin to see that the Tav is a dichotomy. It is good on one side, but on the other side it's bad. Because you see, completion can also mean an end. And completion can also mean it is done. I have completed it. And therefore I don't have to move anymore. And you see, the same applies to people. There are some people who have to restrict on their restriction. They dwell on their past restrictions that they might have done, and they get benefits from it. However, the moment you dwell on your past restriction, you lose it. The moment you dwell on the fact that you did a good job, you didn't do it anymore. So how does this manifest itself in reality? Well, now we know that the letter Tav is the letter for the moon. That we learned in our Rosh Chodesh seminars the first year. Tav is the letter that is associated with the moon. The moon is associated with Earth, it's the sister, and is Malchut. Malchut is the end. Malchut is completion. It's the last of the seven planets. It is the nearest to the Earth. The moon was created, according to Rabbi, by the Tav, and that's why there's a dark side to the moon and a light side to the moon. The dichotomy, the two sides to the Tav. The death and the life. And according to the Sefer Yetzirah, the moon is also responsible for growth because the tides are controlled by the moon. It makes things rise. Everything that grows, says the Sefer Yetzirah, is controlled by the moon, including us. And therefore, the Sefer Yetzirah tells us that if you want to plant something, plant it in the time of the moon's growing. When is that? From the first day of the month until the 15th. Of the Hebrew month, because that's when the moon is growing. And that's the month of Cancer. The month of Cancer, and what do we call Cancer? We call it a? Sartan, yeah, but what do we call it in English? Well, we call it, it's a growth. So growth can be good, and growth can be bad. And this is because it's ruled by the Tav, according to the Zohar, anyway. Not everything that grows is good. Not everything that grows is the right kind of growth. And that's why you have the dichotomy with people born under the sign of Cancer who grow either to the right or to the left. There's no middle ground with them. They just see black and white. And there's no grays for them. If it's right, it's right. If it's wrong, it's wrong. It's like, that's it. It's the truth. These are the people of the truth. Emet. Emet must be Emet. The truth must be the truth. There's no other way. But you see, there's a problem with all this. Because in this world, there is no real truth. And you cannot live with absolute truth. And that's the reason why the world was not created with the letter Tav. Nobody owns the absolute truth down here. Nobody has the absolute truth, not even Terry Fox. Everything is in the grays. What is this life about? It is mercy. Right? It is 1% right and 99% wrong. You still get some points. Now the next time you learned from your mistakes, you get a little more light. Now you'll perform a little better. You'll get a little more points. Less ego, more light, until finally you'll do it right. And so you work through many lifetimes and you finally did it right, and it's still 1% wrong. But you have to understand this. This is a process that counts. It's not what you did. Remember, God is near to all who call upon him in truth. Therefore, understand in truth has nothing to do with what you did, but with where you are coming from at any present moment. It is coming from your consciousness. And if you really mean it, it's in your consciousness, that is good. Because there are some people who don't really mean it. You know, I go to shul and I watch people pray. I come to the synagogue and I see everybody praying there, and they don't mean it, some of them. They just sit there and like robots. I do it too sometimes. get into the habit. But there's a nice, beautiful story about Yom Kippur. And this, I don't know, it's told about different rabbis. I'll tell it to you about the Baal Shem Tov. So this guy came into this fellow who comes in from the fields. And he doesn't know how to pray, can't read, doesn't know anything. But he feels moved, he wants to do something. And so right in the middle of the prayer service on Kol Nidrei night on Yom Kippur, he goes, and everyone turns around at him, he screams at him and yells at him. The Baal Shem Tov stopped him and he said, stop, that whistler has more feeling and more truth in his prayer than all of you people. That's one line of the story. So we'll tell stories told another way. The boy comes in and he says, look, my father didn't have enough money. He only had enough money to teach me the alphabet. That's it. The alphabet. That's it. I can't put these words together. I don't know how. But you know what, God? You're smart. I will say the alphabet. You take the letters and put them into the right words. And then the Baal Shem, so what he does, Alephet Gimel Dalet Hei Bov Tzayin Chetim. So people looking at him like it's crazy. Baal Shem Tov stops him and says, no, his prayer is much more important than yours because his comes sincerely from the heart. And he says, these boys saved us because they believed it. He did it with all his might. So it's not what you do, but where you are coming from when you're doing it. And the Zohar says, the one who wants to be truly purified will get the help. I don't know how to become better, but I want to become better. If you really want to become better, you're going to get better. Nothing comes for free. You got to work for it. If you really try, then you get the knowledge and help, and you get all that you need. So what the Torah is talking about is that God is close to those who come to Him truthfully. The one who goes from Aleph to Taf, from Alpha to Omega, everything that he has, all his might, that is what counts, and that's what brings him the rewards. That's the key. And that's why lack of knowledge is not an excuse. It's only if you want to. It's now. It's really truthful. Then you can get it. So the connection can only be made when you come to him in truth. And if you don't, then you will leave the service as empty as you were when you entered. And I got lots of people walking out, coming in the same way. So the Tav is something that you want, but you got to recognize it limits you. And this means that it can't be the best of the whole universe, because it has a dichotomy. And so God said to the Tav, we need a letter that has only good associated with it. It can't have another side. We need a letter that no matter what it does, it will end for good. But with the Tav, you know, you really do not know where it's going to be. It can be this way, it can be the other way. And that's why in the story, when we began and showed you the Tav, we noticed that the left leg was thick. You see it? But look again, and you will notice it goes below the line. You see, you can't see it on the paper, but you can see it here. It goes below the line. Whoever read the chapter on the Tav and the power of the alphabet, the Tav was noticing that his leg was going under the line, and what does that mean? If this represents the spiritual world, and this represents the nether world, or whatever you want to call it, this is Malchut. This is where we are. This is our world. Okay? So if you look at it from that perspective, what is this telling us? The left leg that was going under the line was nourishing the klipah, the veil, the negative side, because the klipah has to live as well. You know that. Just imagine. If there weren't any klipah, we would never be able to do our correction. There would be no way for us to do our correction, because where would be our seduction? There would be no seduction. Where would be our temptation? Where is the choice to make between good and evil? Where is the fight? So therefore, we have to feed the klipah so that the klipah will remain alive until we finish our job. But the book tells us that the Dark Lord was receiving too much nourishment from the Tav, and we know that too much sensitivity, too much exaggeration can cause a cancer, because the source of cancer is found in the month of Cancer. Why? Because of its imbalance, and too much of it can easily drop you below the line. So that's why God took the left leg and folded it up until it became very thick, and now it doesn't descend below the line.
Oh, it doesn't anymore?
No, not anymore. So now we take it as God, that's it. No, okay. But at one time it did. Okay, that's according to the Zohar. Now, you know on Shabbat, you're not allowed to tear letters. You know that. My father and mother, they used to take the sweet and low and cut it before Shabbos so that they wouldn't tear it. Now, if they didn't do that, they still would be allowed to tear it for eating purposes. But they wanted to be very safe. So, because what you do when you tear the letters, you're destroying the words. And this applies to all letters, because English letters come from Hebrew as well. The letter which is equivalent in English to the Tav is the, anybody know? No.
Z.
X.
Mm.
Yeah. It was the Tav with the leg going under. A Tav with an X means the same thing. When you put an X on something, or if you put a Tav on in Hebrew on something, it has the same idea. I didn't know that, by the way, but I read that. The Tav is made up of two Hebrew letters. I mentioned it before. What are the two Hebrew letters? This is a Dalet, right? And this is a Nun. You see it? The Dalet is a vessel and a Nun. Nun means falling. So you see in the Tav you have this negative side of the Tav. The Dalet is the vessel. And when we speak about the Dalet and the Nun, we will discuss this further when we get to those two letters. This applies to all letters, are combinations of letters and vibrations and structures. So what really makes things real? What was the 80s? In the 80s, people visualized. People went to seminars. They listened to tapes. They visualized. They imagined. They said it was, you know, they screamed it. They wrote it. And then to them it was real. And then what happened? It all went up in a puff of smoke. Gone. One day they were millionaires and the next day they owed millions. It's going to happen again, folks. So what is real? I would put all my money in gold if I had any money. Who knows if that's going to be worth anything? Well, when there's a completion, that's real. When something is manifested, when it's done in the right for the right purposes, when there is the right consciousness, when it's not done for the ego. Because if you think about yourself, you leave the ball in your court. The only way you can make it permanent by bouncing the ball back into the other court. You see, the moment you fell, and the moment you fall and you say it's their fault, no good. The moment you stumble, it's me. I'm enjoying it. Where's the ball? In my court. No, when you're saying I'm enjoying it, it's in my court. At that moment, I don't have it. Looks like I have it, but it's an illusion. When you hit the ball back, you create the completion. And what is the restriction? It is stop and change its direction back. And this applies to many other things as well. It can apply to volunteer work. And who are the ones who stay in the volunteer work? It's those who don't care. The only legitimate vessel is returning light. And you see a person can work all his life and all he does is receive and receive, and how do you know what is real? The one which stays after. There are thousands of rich people in Europe. Who do you remember? Who do you remember as the rich man of Europe? The rich family of Europe?
Rothschilds.
What did they do with their money? They built wineries, they built cities in Israel, and many other philanthropic activities. So today, he is remembered for that. But his original wealth is not as great. And what remains is what he did by bouncing the ball back. The only person who made something and kept it was the person who leaves the impression after him. It's not the one who kept everything, but rather the person who shared everything. And that's the reason why the Tav never gets appointed as the energy intelligence to create the world. Phobos, because it had two sides.
And we're looking for something that can only have a good side and not a bad side. So the letter Tav took its little foot, its little tail, and put it between its legs and went back without complaining because it recognized that it was not, wow, we can't get rid of that. It was not the letter or the energy structure that was necessary to make this world a better world, or a world which would be an endless world. Questions? Answers?
Is it always appropriate to say Emmet at the end of a prayer, then?
Well, no. That's just, yeah, it is appropriate if you want. You can say Amen, too. You know.
Yeah, I've heard it saying Emmet. After each story, after each...
You do it, too?
No, I don't know, but I heard it with the Gemini.
I say Emmet and I say Baruch.
Baruch too, why?
That's the first of the next of the prayer that was said, of the next reader comes up. I don't know why, it just happens.
What do you think?
What's your name?
The Yemenites do it, Svardim do it too. Baruch and Jesus.
The Yemenites. You finished the Emmet.
Say Emmet.
So now this is also, doesn't this also relate to the tribe of Dan?
Could.
Dan was at the, wasn't Dan at the back and gathered up everything on the
well, way? He wasn't such a good guy, those Danites. At the end of the judges, he comes out to be a bad guy.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
if
he's always
wasn't Dan the last
tribe? What's the fantasy?
Following behind.
It's a fantasy if you take it literally.
The Israelites are going to
We're not taking this literally.
No, of course not.
It's trying to teach you a way to live.
Yeah. It's a way for teaching. Right.
You know, I want to tell you something.
It would not inspire me. My personality.
That's okay.
As a vehicle to teach.
As a vehicle to teach. Well, you know, I can't find it. It's on my computer somewhere. But I wrote a book on this. I wrote the book, Energy Structure, on the Energy Structure of the Elephant.
I don't know. One or the other of your books, I saw.
Okay.
Maybe it was that. But it was also fantasy.
It was also fantasy?
Yeah.
Well, of course. So I wrote this Energy Structure, and then I wrote it for a child. With letters, you know, pictures. Just one or two pages for each letter. Can't find it. Because I want to publish it, but I can't find it. It would be a great teaching tool for children.
So you have this book?
Yeah, I have this. What I'm doing now, I have this book. I can bring it.
So the idea is that we're looking for a letter that could lead us to an endless universe.
That is correct.
Because initially I was thinking that if you're going to have an energy intelligence that you can create this world with, this world is a world of death and truth.
Well, you must understand.
I mean, this world's divided all the time.
Right, but according to Kabbalah, and according to the Kabbalists, this is not a world that is continually expanding and going to destroy. This is a world that has within it endlessness. It's not going to destroy itself. Very interesting. You know, when God promised Noah that he would not destroy the world again, he didn't promise that you won't destroy the world.
Right.
He said he's not going to do it.
Oh, he also said he's not going to do it by flood. He didn't say he would do it by
flood. Well, that's true. But, you know, I think you realize that the thinking is he's just not going to destroy the world.
But he's given it to us. Created it with two energies, one that could go the wrong way and one that could go the right way.
Well, there's the Yetzirah, the Yetzirah Tov. There's the good inclination and the evil inclination. And the Gemara in Sota pictures the evil inclination. The rabbis pictured him as a fiery lion. And so they said, hey, we're going to take this lion and put him in a jail, incarcerated. And they incarcerated him. And for 3 days and three nights, says the Gemara, Tanis, I think. No, it's got to be Sota. They couldn't find a freshly laid egg in the town, which meant if you want life in this world, you need the evil inclination. Without that, there'd be no birth, there'd be no sex, there'd be no marriage, there'd be no relationships, there'd be
no... Those rise to the relative opposites. God, I can't know good if you don't have bad.
Yeah.
How would you know it was good?
Well, that's another thing.
Bad, yeah.
But you need the temptation, so therefore that you can overcome that
right.
Which is...
So you think you'd want to create the world with the two?
Well, that's why he created the tree of knowledge. He didn't create the tree of knowledge so that we would sit there and not eat it. He created it so we'd eat it.
But if you create it with the energy of just the endless, where it's only good, there's no risk. You know it's going to turn out good.
That is correct.
Great for us. I'm very happy about that. I'm glad that I know what the end should be, but it seems like, you know... It seems
but
like
then there's no room for growth.
Yeah, it seems like that's kind of like stacking the deck. You know, you should have left it where it could go either way. You don't know. Turn out good or bad.
Well, God doesn't even know. He said, and he saw that all the world, all that he made was good. I mean, he didn't know. In six chapters later, he says, ugh, what did I get myself into? This mess that this world is.
Yeah, but he knows how it's going to turn out. Sees the end from the beginning.
Well, you know, the idea of God being all-knowing, all-powerful, and all, I can't even think of the other third of the word. Omnipotent, omniscient,
and omnipresent.
Omnipresent, yeah. The idea of God being omnipotent is really, I've come to the conclusion that that's not so. He's not omnipotent. He might have radical power, but he's not omnipotent. Because if he were, you know, I mean, then he could do whatever, he could stop you from doing what you're doing, but he can't. So he's not all powerful, because you have free will.
So he could, he could.